This is my ship, the Nebuchadnezzar. It's a hovercraft. This is the main deck. This is the core, where we broadcast our pirate signal and hack into the Matrix. Most of my crew, you already know.
Hello and welcome to the first broadcast from the Nebuchadnezzar radio station, which is the radio station for the Avebury Moot. The Avebury Moot is a gathering that takes place on the first Sunday of each month in and around Avebury. You can get details of when these gatherings are and what topics of conversation are going to be at www.avebrymoot.blogspot.com. And first of all, I think I'll just mention that during Yule, when we had our moot, we just had an open discussion about things that we enjoyed and liked over the last year and how we could bring those things into the next year and what other things we could bring in as well. One of the key things that popped up from that was the possibility of beginning to broadcast some of the moots and getting them out on the internet so that people around the world can listen in. Currently, the Avebury Moots blog is getting quite a number of hits a day from all over the world. I think we've had hits from over maybe up to 70 countries now. And also recording moots on the fly, so when I bump into people that would have material that would make for an excellent moot, and for whatever reason can't make it along to any of our moots, then I shall be recording those as well and broadcasting those on the Nebuchadnezzar radio station. And so to date, we have one proper moot recorded, which was hosted and presented by myself, and I've also got two other moots I've done on the fly. One of a chap called Pete and another of Tom, and both of those will be coming out shortly to you as well. Recently also, some of you would have noticed that the moot has moved from the Red Lion, the pub in Avebury, and the last moot was held in the Social Centre, which is opposite the church on the High Street. The next moot is also going to be at the Social Centre, but just keep your eyes peeled on the blog and I will keep everybody updated as to where the moots are going to be held. And so I think without further ado, I will just say enjoy the moot. This particular moot, like I said, was hosted and presented by myself, and the topic of discussion, or up for discussion, was additives. I'm not just talking about the additives you find in food, I'm also talking about all the additives that we have placed into our own lives. And I've been on a bit of a journey with these last couple of years, as you hear on the moot, in an attempt really to remove some of these additives from my life. I won't give too much away, I'll let you listen on the moot. So, without further ado, here we go. Enjoy. Thank you.
And I thought I'd do a talk on additives. And it started off by looking at one of these things, I guess, which is like a little credit card thing that a friend sent me. And it's got on it all the different E numbers and stuff but you have to be careful of. I'll pass that, you've seen it, haven't you? Pass it around. So. But actually, I've been thinking about additives for quite a few years. It started with when I was, I think it was when I was in Thailand, I kept having to buy Western products. I was uncomfortable with using some of the Thai products. So I got this, I buy something gentle, so I've got Johnson's Baby Shampoo. I just use that as like a all-over wash. And turned it over and looked through it, and it's got quite an interesting mix of poisonous chemicals. I started then to sort of move away from quite a lot of things that I class as additives, but I thought I'd start by going around and just seeing if anybody's got some ideas of additives other than the standard sort of additives you just put in foods. Throw it to the floor. Additives. Sorry. Yeah.
Sodium methyl sulfate.
Oh, is that the sodium lauryl sulfate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they put that in toothpaste as well.
Yeah. They put it in pretty much everything, I think.
Yeah, it makes it frothy. And they often market it as a natural product because it's in pine trees. But doesn't mean we can eat it. You know what I mean? Anything else? Huh? Any others? Anybody aware of it? They maybe a particular additive that you might avoid actively?
Aspartame.
Aspartame. Yeah.
That's a chemical sweetener.
Yep.
Very poisonous.
Often marketed as NutraSweet by the CERL organisation. Great company.
There's a salt for me. There's normally goes in it as well, isn't there?
A salt for me.
Is that another sweetener? Or?
I think so. Yeah. I've seen Coke. I don't know.
Yeah. A lot of the sweeteners are. Do the same sort of stuff. Yeah. I'm going to go on to aspartame in a minute anyway.
Isn't aspartame otherwise known as wood
alcohol? By the time you've processed it, your body can't do anything other than turn it into wood alcohol, yeah. And then into formaldehyde. Yeah.
What are all these chemicals in anyway?
Huh?
Why put all the chemicals in anyway?
Good question.
Thank you, Tom. But there does it preserve, you know, I mean...
Well, when I look at an additive, I sort of want to define what an additive was for me. Right? The way I define an additive is something that a corporation wants to sell me for profit and wants me to feel that I need that thing again and again and again and again. Yeah. Often marketed as beneficial to health, whilst at the same time sidelining good science... because they own the science, and promoting bad science or misinterpreting science. That's kind of how I look at additives. So that brings in a few more things, not just the chemicals that are found in food, but I'll start with fluoride.
Toothpaste. Oh, no, in the water as well.
So put your hands up if you're aware of a fluoride one. Yes, that's pretty up preaching to them. So I won't dwell on it, but when I describe an additive, I said it's something that, you know, a corporation would want to sell you and use bad science. Well, fluoride is a great example because fluoride, I think, before it was put in water as a byproduct of some different processes. One of them was aluminium. Another one was, and that was a DuPont, I believe a DuPont organisation. But they were also manufacturing that fluoride because it had military uses in the Manhattan Project and other areas. Like. And so, but what started to happen was around the DuPont factories, there started to be a bit of a fallout. People would start to lose IQ, become more docile, crops would fail, cattle would be ill, etc., etc. And so a solution, a potential solution was, what if we marketed fluoride in the first place as something that was beneficial to health and was something approved by the FDA? And if we can do that, then there couldn't be any possibility of litigation for a fallout of fluoride. And so they went ahead and used Edward Bernays. Anyone heard of Edward Bernays? You should look up Edward Bernays, fascinating character. Relation, I think nephew of Freud, used a lot of Freud's techniques and applied them to marketing and created marketing as we know it today. So basically marketing using Freud's stuff was based at the ego, so a lot of the marketing now is based on things that impel us to feel that we need certain products. And so I'll put a link to Edward Bernays on the blog actually, because it's quite an interesting story in itself. So they used him, and so and some political wallop, and before you know it, the FDA... Oh, yeah, yeah, this is... as soon as they got it in the US, of course, then it's much easier to get it into Europe. And so now you've got this fluoride, where there are no actual scientific studies to now prove that it's a benefit to health. And there are plenty of scientific studies to suggest that it could be otherwise. Now, they say one part per million in your water is probably you can tolerate. That's based on 2.5 cups of water. But now you've got it in toothpaste, You've got it in the produce that you buy because it's used tap water to water the crops. You've got it put into other products like orange juice and things like that. So you have to be very careful, I think, of fluoride. But that one is just a great example, I think, of this is what we want to do. We want to sell this product, and we're going to make sure we can sell it. And so they walk down the line, and before you know it, everybody's buying the product. And now it's almost assumed, outside of this group here, it's assumed that it's something that is beneficial to health. Quite bizarre. So that's why. Another one, of course, is table salt, which I think we, was I speaking to you about that? Yeah. It's just going on about sea salt. And, you know, sea salt is something that we absorb and has all the minerals and things that our body needs, all the micronutrients and minerals and things that our body needs for survival. We can't survive without it, in fact, right? Table salt is a chemically produced imitation of that. And so it doesn't give us any of the benefits. In fact, our body eventually begins to reject it. And it tips the balance in our systems and turns our systems more acidic, etc., etc., etc. And another one was, the aspartame. With aspartame, you've got... It was a soil organisation. They came up with something that just happened to have a strange taste, sweet taste. And wouldn't it be great if we could get that as an additive we could add to lots of stuff and then sell it worldwide, now known as NutraSweet. So they got what they wanted. The original science for aspartame was very negative. All the test animals, the rats, etc., all developed cancers and tumours and all sorts of things. And so the FDA were like, no way, we're not having this in our country, it's a poison. Right? And there were hundreds of studies to support this. But CERL's a very big organisation, and they've got a very good very good marketing wing and very good planning and a vision of how you can make a lot of money out of a very simple thing. And so they hired our good friend Donald Rumsfeld as the marketing wing for aspartame. And he was great because he got this... He goes, right, no worries, we'll trash all the science, we'll buy it, right? We'll make some more science, which we'll own, and so we can pull out of it exactly what we want. And if it's negative science, we'll just bury it anyway. And we use political and marketing power to get it through. And so on the day that Reagan got into power, Donald Rumsfeld, neocon, straight into power also, head of the FDA sacked, new guy comes in, aspartame gets in, right? Instantly. And all the people that okayed in the panels and stuff that okayed the use of aspartame within the FDA itself, the Food and Drugs Administration, were then later on promoted into CERL and into higher jobs and better pay. Right? So another example, and these ones are more. I'll pick on those ones because they're everywhere, pervasive. And aspartame, of course, as you were saying, when you ingest it, it turns into wood alcohol, or methanol. And the only way the body can deal with that is to convert it to formaldehyde. And the only way the body can then deal with that is to create fat to sink the formaldehyde so that it doesn't get, so you detoxify the system. So in actual fact, diet drinks just create fat in the body, but full of toxins as well. So that's a bit gloomy, isn't it, really? Sorry, John.
I say a lot of these chemical companies are making an awful lot of money out of it.
Yeah. Another one, of course, that... And so then I started to think, well, it's not just the chemicals that are in food and water and, you know, the things that you're buying, but also things that are given to us, like our drugs. If we go for headache pills or things like this. And so a classic one, again, is the one is insulin. I'll come to food last, again, but when I talk about food, you realise that it is a lot of it is an additive or addictive, right? And we're compelled both by marketing and by the products themselves to continue eating them. And so it's no wonder, and as a direct result of this sort of eating, this fat, this style of eating, the nation begins to put more on more and more weight. And it's no wonder then, it's no surprise then, but there's a direct correlation between weight gain and diabetes. Right? And so what happens is somebody will begin to put on some weight, typically around the midsection here, if you get a lot of weight around the midsection. The pancreas is producing the insulin to cope with the food that you're eating. And the more sugar type food you eat, the more load you put onto the pancreas, it's working even harder. And then you're potentially putting on more weight because of the amount of sugar you're eating. The fat then begins to absorb your own natural insulin. Eventually there's a point where the pancreas can't provide enough. It's still working, right? This is where type 2 diabetes kicks in. You then need insulin, pharma insulin, to help you out. Now, pharma insulin isn't natural insulin. It's only a small part of the actual... the body's own insulin is this rich bunch of chemicals and nutrients which is like help out the system, whereas insulin in pharma insulin is a very simple and actually foreign comic chemical, and the body for a while go, great, we can now deal with this stuff, right? And so potentially you're still putting on weight, you're pumping more pharma insulin into yourself, and it gets to a point where type 1 diabetes kicks in, where the pancreas just isn't able to keep up with it anymore. And what the doctor should be saying to people is, stop eating sugar to start with. Yeah? Stop. People with type 2 diabetes, if they had to stop eating sugar and lose just a little bit of body weight, their pancreas would then be able to keep up with what they're doing. And so in my view, insulin is an additive, because I can't remember statistics of the amount of people that are on insulin in America, but it's
all of them.
Yeah, it's quite a few. it's quite a few, and that's a lot. That's an additive then, isn't it? Because people are reliant on it, and they need more and more of it, and more and more and more. And so now that I've said all that, can anyone think of any different types of additives that we might be using?
I saw something quickly on BBC News today that they're going to leave out an additive in beer.
Leave out an additive?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
Is it sulfites in beer?
Sulfites are in cider and beer. But
no, it was on the BBC News. And it was an additive, and I switched on to sport. And I can't remember what it was, but it was on there today. On their website, you know, BBC website.
It's is that beer or lager, though? Is that beer or lager? Because I differentiate between the two.
Yeah, right.
Because a good few years ago, I remember having a pint of, I think it was Carlsberg, and I felt the top of my head, skin shrink.
Right.
Yeah. And somebody offered me a pint of stout.
Right.
I thought, I'd have a go at that. You know, put the lager to one side. And back to easy.
Yeah, right.
So there's always chemicals in lager. Half the stuff is chemical.
I don't know what.
There's chemicals in bitter as well, and there's some interesting stuff that goes into the refining of bitter as well.
Ale. You get Camden refinings as well.
Sorry.
Wine. Camden.
Oh, Camden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't that dissipate out when you open the bottle though? Right. That's why you should let it stand to let it become less toxic.
You were saying that about the doctors, they try and give you more additives rather than cure the problem.
Yeah.
I take an asthma inhaler.
Yeah.
I went to the doctors and she said, you're not breathing out as much as you should from the weight. So she said, I'll put you on a stronger asthma inhaler for my lungs to open up. But I said, well, that's not curing the problem. So I said, wouldn't it be better if I lost weight, went to the gym and lost weight? I've put it back on now. I lost a lot of weight, but I thought that was probably a lot better than taking a stronger inhaler. And you know, I thought, well, they're not trying to kill the problem, trying to mask it, really.
Yeah.
Aren't they run by the drug companies?
Yeah.
So they're funded and run.
Pharmaceutical
companies.
I also think some of it's personal, though, as well.
Personal?
Yeah. We have to start taking personal responsibility for our own health. We're going to the doctors for something like management here, we're trying to as well.
Sorry.
At some point, like what you did, we have to take personal responsibility. So we know that if we lose weight, it's going to improve our health. Actually, we know that if, I don't know, with something like asthma, I know that if I go swimming, that's likely to improve the way that I breathe. So it is partly the doctor's responsibility, and they are partly funded by the drugs companies. But regardless of what they're doing, we know we can bring that responsibility back to us and say, right, here's what we can do and empower ourselves to do it.
I did put it back on.
it's up to all of us to support each other, I think, because if everyone starts eating healthier, like I've had personal experience, a couple of friends have started eating healthier. Now that's had a knock-on impact on me because I see that around me every single day now. So it's like, oh, actually, maybe I'll have an apple today instead of a chocolate bar because actually there's loads of fresh fruit because my friends are all around. Just little things like that where we're supporting each other.
Well, the people can eat healthy food, natural food. Why have food with chemicals in anyway?
Well, that's a great point because if you look at, we're all told to look at the macronutrients, fat, carbohydrate, and protein, right? And if we get too much of any of those, then we start to it's not necessarily healthy for us. But a lot of our foods are just that. They're just either fat, protein, or carbohydrate. So if you get a slice of bread, it's fat and carbohydrate, mostly carbohydrate. You get a piece of chicken, it's mostly fat and protein, right? And it doesn't contain all the micronutrients, antioxidants, and I can't remember the other sorts, photochemical, bioflavonoids, I don't know what that. Right. Like within an apple itself, there's a whole host of nutrients, but science just isn't even aware of them yet. Yeah. You look like you're about to ask me a question.
Yeah, well, actually, talking about animals and birds and stuff like
that.
What about the stuff that is actually injected into them?
Yeah.
They're obviously added to
growth promoting.
Yeah. Antibiotics as well.
That's true. So a lot of
they're adding they're actually added to as well because they're added to the diet without us wanting them to be added to.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of examples. I was just talking about organic food a minute ago, and for something to be labelled as organic, it has to contain how much?
I think it's 94% organic.
Right, and 6%.
But there are ways they can get around that on the labelling as well because. As you were saying, in Sainsbury's they've got Oso Organic. Actually say it's organic, it's saying it's Oso, it's almost there. So even then it can be less than that.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful in what you're
buying. Well, they use deviating words.
Yeah, very.
So what happens is we get a cigarette, for example. I'm kidding. So should we have a quick break? Yeah? I'm sure there's people itching for their little dose of additive. You believe that, do you? You believe that the rollies are better for you than
Oh, I know they're not, but I just can't. It's just the others are worse.
A lot of it's probably in here, isn't it? If it's all right with you, then...
Logic cyclist said I can have it.
Yeah, go have a quick 5 minutes and I'll come finish a bit on food and...
I feel very guilty now. It's cute you didn't come on with that. That's why I'm excited. Just get ready for later.
Can't blame someone. Right. Some of you who got here late didn't hear me say that we're recording all of these now.
Oh,
right.
I'll be broadcasting some of them as sort of podcasts from the site, the particularly good ones, so maybe. And so, if at any point, if anyone ever says anything and they don't want it to be broadcast to the wider world, and just let me know, and I'll use your voiceover to bleep it.
Cheers.
That's okay. Actually, it's quite good. It's quite good doing a moots in here, because this is where I do the medieval martial arts. .co.uk. I was eating some sprouts, bean sprouts, the other day, and I noticed just as I was putting my hand into the sprouts that I'd got some dog turd on my hand. Right. Oh, thank you. Here's some sprouts. Got some dog. And I don't know where. I must have done that or something off my shoe. So I pulled out a bit of tissue and wiped it clean. I went to eat my sprouts again. Everyone's like, no, you've got to wash them. Right? I thought, that's a bit strange. I never normally do. Well, I do. But that's it. So if you get a bit of excrement on your hand, you want to wash it, right? So it's not sufficient to use a bit of tissue to wipe it off. What about if you get a bit of excrement on your leg? Does the same apply? You've got turd in your leg, are you happy just to wipe it off with a bit of tissue and carry about your day, or would you rather use a flannel and something?
I would say yes, for the simple reason. You scratch your leg when you've got an itch, what are you doing?
Right. What about if you've got it on your sort of front here somewhere?
I'd definitely be washing the bloody
And yet it's totally acceptable, isn't it, for us to not wash ourselves after using the toilet? And what we've done there. I'm talking mainstream. What most people would do is they're quite happy with just using the product tissue, toilet paper. Yeah. Right. And so that got to me a bit, because I was thinking, well, that's another additive, really. You can't go shopping without buying toilet paper, so we have to buy it. We feel we have to buy it. And yet the irony is, it doesn't really do that much other than sort of smear stuff. I mean, it clears stuff.
Rearranges it.
Right. I won't go into too much detail. Right. But I was in Thailand a few years ago. You know Thailand?
Yeah.
And a bit of a shock. I've been to India first. So got to Thailand, and they don't really use toilet paper. They use, they've still got toilets most of the time. Quite often we've got squat toilets, but we've got normal toilets. Maybe it's little pipes and a little jet gun of water. And you use that to clean yourself. And I'm just trying to get my head around using these things. But the result of using those things was that I found myself to feel much fresher and cleaner. And think about it, these people don't have to buy toilet paper. They just use water. Yeah. So it's another example of an additive which has been...
Some of the places have got toilet paper there, but you don't put it in these...
That's right, because their drains, their pipes are too small. That basket is always a bit of a curiosity to me, John, nothing to say. toilet paper. Would you class that as an additive now that we've put it in that sort of fashion? Maybe? What about running shoes? Now, running shoes are interesting. Running shoes are an additive in response to an additive. So the first additive is tarmac, asphalt, everywhere, to our landscape, which we don't really need, really, except for maybe lots of vehicles getting from one place to another. But then, won't go into that. But if we weren't running on hard surfaces, we wouldn't necessarily need to protect our feet, right? And so actually there are now lots of studies to show that when you're running with running shoes, what people tend to do is, because they're cushioned and designed to be cushioned, you strike the floor with your heel, and then the energy travels across your foot on the outside of the bridge, and then you push off with your ball of your feet. And so they've got these machines. When I was doing a marathon a few years ago, I went and got my feet done at an Adidas shop. And you run on this pad, and they've got all these like thermal imaging and pressure reading, all this sort of stuff. But they gave me the perfect set of shoes with the right sort of cushioning and stuff, so that I'd get that even sort of flow of energy transferring from my heel across my foot. But when you get on one of those and you take your shoes off, it's a totally different story. You only run on the balls of your feet. That's what we're designed to do, human beings, right? And so as soon as you start striking the floor of your heel, you get all sorts of problems with knee joints, shock, so you need more cushioning, and then you start running even more incorrectly. And I think there's some research released on the BBC the other day to sort of, bare feet running or something or other. I didn't quite catch it, so I heard somebody talking about it. And there's somebody that's just recently run, or was going to run a marathon barefoot. And their contention is they're going to be a lot better off over 26 point whatever is miles than people wearing the shoes. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, isn't it? You start to think, well, so shoes have been sold, running shoes have been sold to us and scientifically proven to help us whilst running. That's not, doesn't appear to be really the case. Yeah? So what other products are out there we buy all the time have the same qualities? Anybody think of it on the top of your head? It's probably something you need to just sort of chill out with and have a think about for a while. Deodorants? Yeah? Have you got a solution to your deodorant?
Salt.
Who said that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the rock salt. So you use this rock salt under your armpits. You still continue to sweat, but you've neutralised the bacteria, so you don't smell. And so therefore your pores are working as they should do.
Do they do that in aerosol?
You got an idea, haven't you? I reckon you made a packet. It did. You can get roll on. I think you can get squirty ones. It's a solution.
But there is aluminium in the deodorants.
Which ones?
Roll on.
All right, a lot of the aerosol.
The label, if you read it, is aluminium.
Yeah. Ah, look at that. Salt deodorant. I think it's minus a case, is it?
Huh?
Yeah.
You often get a little plastic tube on it as well, but yeah. And you can, these are the more sort of manufactured sorts. You can buy the sort of lumps of it,
yeah,
which tend, if you drop it, break everywhere. It's hilarious, but yeah, you can buy big lumps of it. I don't use any chemicals myself. So what I've been trying to do over the years, as I've sort of come to realise it, is more and more about this idea that there's more loads of additives and things that are potentially not good for us. Although, not everything I've said, I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure about the fluoride or the aspartame. It's just what other, it's second-hand knowledge, what other people have said. So I'm just doing my best to try and move away from things that appear to me not to be so good. Right?
What about when you shave?
I use... I'm about to get a cutthroat razor. So I'm not using disposables. But I've reduced the use of the disposables to about one small pack per 6 months because I use oil. So I started off with olive oil, used that, and then over time I've adapted it, and now I use almond oil with a bit of tea tree in it and a bit of lavender just to calm the face down. But I get a closer shave from doing that. And it's really weird to begin with because you can feel each hair going click, 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 click. But once you get used to it, it's just as fast and smooth. Yeah. Just feels slightly different. And there's no chemicals, there's no stuff. Because when you're shaving, you're opening up your pores, aren't you? What don't you want in your skin when you open up your pores? Yeah.
Big issue with products for moon bloods.
So that's a great one, isn't it? Moon cups, because moon cups allow you to move away from the cycle of consuming a product, and suddenly you're in control. I've now got the moon cup. I don't need anything else to deal with the menstruation process.
Another one that women use mostly is hairspray.
Hairspray. Ah.
There's some chemicals in that.
But natural oils and things, if you do the research, there are oils that are beneficial to the health of the hair. Yeah?
We do have choices on these things, but it would tend to be, even without a moon cup, it would tend to be have to be washable things. And we'd have to come into contact with our own fluids a little bit more, and a lot of this stuff is to remove us from our own odours, from our yeah. my fluids, from the dirt, from getting our hands mucky. And on the subject of sanitary products in particular, it's Tampax. They put bleach in Tampax to make them white, which then women put inside their bodies. And the reason why they do that is because we're conditioned to think the white is cleaner. So the cleaner product, if you get a natural Tampax, it's kind of a colour of sheep's wool.
It's creamy, like yeah.
Creamy colour. And that's a lot of additives. I think it's somewhere in the region of about 90% of what they call preservatives that are put in food are put in food to make it look like we think it should look, because they've sold us how it should look.
So that's a great... So the answer to a lot of this, dealing with a lot of this, lies within ourselves, about our own perceptions of what it is. Like the shaving, for example. It took me a while to get used to it. Now I prefer it. Moon caps and the food. I now go out, and especially summertime, I try and get as much of the wild food that I can. So harvesting leaves and fruit and things like this. And to a lot of people, they're like, "Oh, they're weeds." And you know, what about dogs and birds? And what about normal stuff? You know, the stuff with all the chemicals on as well. It's still exposed to all of that as well. And that's an interesting thing, because it's about when I think of additives, I think of addictive, right? I almost feel that it's the same. I feel the same sort of way about it. So we're addicted to a lot of the additives because we think that they're right for us. And so food. I was talking about food earlier. I was starting off by saying you've got this fat, protein, carbohydrate mix, which you all think is the right. If we concentrate on that, that's great. But what we're forgetting is all the micronutrients, all the rest of it. And so on a cellular level, right? We're processing this energy that we're putting into our bodies. And if we're only concerned with these macronutrients, fat, protein, carbohydrate, and not getting the micronutrients, the cells then are unable to cope with the byproducts of the processing. So you start to get a toxic build up within the cells, on a cellular level, within the body. Now, what happens then, of course, is that in between eating, you're digesting, and all the energy your body's energy is invested in digesting this protein, this mix of food that you've put into your body. As soon as it stops doing that and stops digesting, the body starts to activate and starts to mobilize and starts to try and move these toxins and stuff out of the cells at a cellular level. And that's when we start to feel a bit, oh, I could really do something to eat, and feeling a bit weak, feeling a bit dizzy. And that, so we're getting like the DTs or whatever at that point. And we go, right, the only way to solve that is to eat a bit of cake or at lunchtime or whatever. And then we've got an addiction. We're addicted to processed foods. And these macro foods, like meat. And so, yeah, please do.
I mean, the problem we have, a lot of people have at the moment with indigestion, IBS, is because we're not eating bitters.
Yeah.
Bitters are so good for you. I mean, until about 200 years ago, it was a normal part of the diet.
That's right.
To be eating herbal bitters, any sort of bitters. And now they're pretty much non-existent.
Dandelion
leaves. Yep. Yeah, perfect. And it does take a while to get accustomed to the taste. Actually, once you've eaten it a few times, most people quite like it. They're fantastic. They're liver cleansers, kidney cleansers. They increase all the bioactivity in the stomach, and they just really get everything moving.
Yeah.
And that is why, because they are missing from our diet, that is why so many people have digestive problems.
So you're going to come do not next move, but we'll move afterwards, aren't you?
Yeah, I think June I said.
If you sort of detox yourself, if you want, for a better, you know, eat healthily,
yeah,
for a while, do you think then, if you don't bail down to the
sales,
your body will actually tell you what it needs.
Exactly right, because what happens then, so you're in that cycle of addictive cycle of eating bad food. And then one day you go, I've had enough, right? I'm gonna experiment for 30 days only on a raw food diet, for example. Just for example.
And then what happens is that your digestion then hasn't got the same load. It's suddenly doing half the work. Because you're putting in, when you're eating raw food, you're putting in all the enzymes that it needs to break down itself anyway. And there's an argument as to whether or not some of the enzymes is destroyed, blah, 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 but who knows. And you're taking out those heavy foods, the sugars and the processed foods and the protein. And, you know, the body, we think protein's good for us because it gives us protein, but it doesn't. What the body has to do is break down the protein into amino acids, which use a lot of energy, and then it uses those amino acids to create new protein where it's needed. So you can leave out, if you left out meat from protein from meat and went straight to kale or some other raw food, you'd get the amino acids immediately. So the body doesn't have to do all that breaking down. It just sends nutrients to where they're needed. And then what begins to happen is that you start to mobilise the healing process, and you start to the body weight starts to get down to where it should be for start. But more importantly, the toxins start to be moved out through digestion. And then once that's cleaned, and once you've been in that cycle for a while, this new cycle, you've habituated the new cycle. When you taste something like a crisp, it's powerful. It's a powerful taste. It's got a lot of additives and salts and MSG in it to make it palatable for your addictive taste bud. But on the plus side of that, you pick up an orange and you eat an orange, and it's just this fragrant, amazing, tasty explosion of experience. It's just different after you've been eating raw or any sort of plant-based sort of diet, I think. So yeah, you're right. You would end up feeling better. You would end up breaking the addiction.
If you taste naturally. Vegetables now, yeah. 100 years ago, the taste is completely different. All vegetables, fruit, anything grown is now grown to have a sweeter taste.
Yeah, right.
It's bred to be sweeter because that's what we think now is good for us, where it's not. If you go back, if you grow your own, the best, try heritage variety to one now, and the difference is absolutely amazing.
Yep.
Cucumbers should be bitter; they shouldn't be sweet.
Yeah, but the thing is, once we get used to that, once we take away the addictive tastes, then suddenly stuff like that has got a different quality altogether, hasn't it? It's like wow, it's amazing taste. I haven't tasted that sort of taste before.
A lot of this starts off right from the beginning. Genetically modified food.
Yeah, I mean,
because we don't know what chemicals go into the seeds. You know.
That's GM foods is a talk on its own. It really is.
It does make you, you know. I mean, rather than that.
So where's raw chocolate?
Well, that's it.
Raw chocolate is a bitter.
Yeah,
but obviously.
In the state now, it's just we've been taught that it should be added with milk and sugar and cream and everything else. And obviously, it's completely different. I mean, you should really, if you're looking at chocolate, you should be looking at something above 87-90% cocoa mix, and that's where you'll get the benefit. You won't get it from anything else.
Yeah, interesting thing with like some of these foods. It's still to me where I eat a bit, and it's like it still feels kind of processed, but. Some of them are quite clever, and they're not necessarily that process. Time's getting on, actually. It's nearly 5, isn't it? So I'll wrap up. Just say that it's been interesting. I mean, I just wrote this up. I've never really thought about this stuff formally, if you like. I've never sat down and done. I've got all these ideas about additives and things that are added to the things that we buy and all the rest of it. But I've been working at eliminating them or simplifying my life. In terms of these sorts of things over the last couple of years, really. And so, and when who is it that said it's, was it you? Said the deciding factor is what your own realization about a particular thing that you buy or feel that you've got the need for. If you do begin to simplify some of the things that you consume and the rest of it. I hope it's an enjoyable process.
Oh yeah, yeah, sorry. Yeah, before I say it's it. Any questions? Before I run away.
Can I just say before everybody goes that most of this stuff here has to be eaten today. So if anybody wants to take any stuff with them, then please do. In particular, I'd like to draw your attention to the milk, which is going, and this organic baby food, because this isn't going out of date today, but it was donated to us, and we can pass it on. So if you will eat it, or if you know anybody who's got children who'd appreciate it, then please take it with you.
Next time we have bags of carrots.
I'm aware of the irony, but it's all here, so please do help yourselves.
Any questions from what we've sort of gone through?
Why don't you write up then a typical thing of what you do? You can just talk of what you do, how you shave. Yeah.
What now, or on a blog? Yeah, all right.
And then that will give us an insight to maybe change a little bit. Also, we're going to start cutting out meat and everything.
It's a pro. I mean, I haven't, for example, the toilet paper one. I haven't solved yet, and there's plenty of other
leaves.
Well, thank you, everybody. See you next time. Keep an eye on the website. I'll put up some bits and bobs about what we talked about, and maybe even put this up as well, so you can listen to it all over again. Thank you. Thank you. Well, there you go, that was the first Moot. I hope you all enjoyed it. I certainly did. Really enjoyed doing the editing as well, getting it all up and running for the first time. Had to learn how to edit, how to mix and fade and all that business. And it's been a fun little adventure. I'd like to add as well that at the end of the Moot there, I suddenly realised the time, it's 5 o'clock, we had to get up and off. But I was also going to add that I think through the process of ridding yourself of these additives, when you look at the major ones such as alcohol, cigarettes, MSG, refined sugars, processed foods, all these sorts of things. By getting those out of your lifestyle, I think it promotes greater clarity and even, dare I say, a greater spiritual connection. Also, I think I should add that during the editing process, there's a couple of snippets I had to leave out. For example, Caroline, she told us a little bit about phthalates, I think it's phthalates, that you find in plastic bottles. And Caroline was just letting us know about what she had found out about phthalates. And there were a couple of other little bits that I edited out as well, mostly because of the background noise. I'm just getting used to this recording equipment still, and it's all about positioning. Coming up next, I've got another snippet by Steve, Stag of Avery. He's giving us a monthly talk, or should I say a monthly segment, which outlines the astrological bits and bobs during the coming month. And so this is Steve now. Hope you enjoy it.
Well, what I'd offer to do is just sort of say what astronomically is going to happen in the next month, and then leave it up to people to comment on if they want to and stuff like that. This month there's not too much happening, but unfortunately the software I used crashed last night and I was up all night and I couldn't get it working.
Oh, so
I've had to sort of fill the information off, you know, web page and just write it down. But in the future I'll try and do it properly and stuff like that. So. Just say what's happening. Do
I
do that?
Yeah, yeah. What do I mean? I'll come sit near you so I can stick this thing under your face.
Well, basically, just saying what. Because I notice sometimes that people miss out on some of the astronomical stuff that's happening. And of course, you know, what goes on in the sky is relevant to what we're doing. First thing to say is that new moon is on the 14th of February. We are having an Imolc ritual which Tash and Gordon are holding, and it's going to be meeting, I think it's about 5 in the morning, something like that, and there'll be a procession from their place along the West Kennet Avenue down to Swallowhead Spring, and carrying torches which will be lit from the hearth at their place and to a fire dish down by Swallowhead Springs, and there we hold a ritual for the dawn to come up. So everyone is welcome to come to that. But if you need to get the full details, get them off of Tash and Gordon. I think it's been put in the Avery Circular, hasn't
it? Yeah, I think it has actually.
It's in the Avery Circular.
Yeah. And that's to do with the crescent moon for Imolc, and you know, to do with water and Bridget and so on. So that ceremony is going to take place then. Now, it also happens that between the 14th and 17th of February, Jupiter, you might have noticed, is now starting to set. And so it's been very prominent all the way through the winter, and it's now going to go behind the sun. And as it goes down, Venus is coming up. And between the 14th and 17th of February, they're going to be very close together. Now, it's going to be right after sunset, so you have to look west just after the sun is set. And if we're lucky, we'll be able to see a crescent moon and Jupiter and Venus all together. And that, of course, occurs on Valentine's Day as well. So there's a lot of energy associated with Venus and Jupiter and the crescent moon. I mean, I don't know if anybody wants to comment on anything on Valentine's Day or how they feel about Venus and Jupiter coming together. Is anyone here into astrology or anything like that?
No, it's quite interesting because the Jupiter, although he's not a war god in the Romans, he's very potent.
Yeah.
He's very potent. And with Venus being goddess of love, one of the many names Aphrodite amongst others, having them together with the crescent moon,
yeah,
the goddess of new birth, which should be quite interesting.
Why, especially with that Imolc energy as well.
That's it.
So, you know, it is quite a rare thing for that to come together at this time of year. So even if we don't actually see it, we know that it depends on the weather conditions, that energy is there around the 14th to the 17th of February. So Imolc, in a sense, isn't over yet. It's still running its course, and there is that, you know, magical moment to come around about that time.
What about the with Mars and the Moon, there was a constellation or something in between which we couldn't see. What sort of constellation is that? Can you?
It might have been that there was, because sometimes you will get a constellation that we don't normally see, which will come up just above the horizon because of the angle of the Earth and so on. It might have been something to do with that, but why it would be related to Mars and the Moon, I couldn't figure out. Mm. Does anybody know about that?
It's too bright to see much.
Well, the other thing is, is when you get the moon like that, it's very difficult to see stars and other things anyway. I mean, you know, Mars is fantastic because it's a bright object, but to see other stars and things like that when you've got a full moon or something like that, it's very, very difficult. You know, comets and things like that just get sort of beached out and so on. And by the way, did you see the we on Imolc on Saturday? We went to West Kennet Long Barrow and dashing it there. Absolutely fantastic moonrise. Yeah. And it had Mars directly above it. It was just, there was the moon and there was Mars. Perfect clear night. It was fantastic, wasn't it?
What colour was it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the orange of Mars as well.
Yeah,
absolutely fantastic. That was a really great energy. Mars, just a quick thing on Mars, it's very prominent in the sky at the moment. It's in the constellation of Cancer at the moment, and it's going retrograde, and it'll do that until about March, and then it'll start going back again. It'll go through Leo and back out that way. But if, you know, Mars at the moment is really, really prominent, and it's got, you know, very strong energy, and it's very clearly seen, so recommend that you go out. See Mars. If you're around about, I would say around about something like 11 o'clock at night, you should see it due south, very high up. So that's very, very prominent. It's sort of like to the left of Orion, and left and high above Orion, in that direction. The next thing about the there's another interesting thing about the moon on the 21st of February, and it's going to be one of those things that's going to happen as the sun goes down. Every now and again, the moon,
because it's not exactly on the ecliptic, it moves up above and below the ecliptic, which is the line of planets. It can go further, it can go higher up and lower down than the planets do, and the sun does. And it, around the 21st, on the 21st of February, about 6 o'clock at night, as the sun goes down and the moon comes up, it becomes visible in the sky. It will be occulting the Pleiades. So we should see the moon coming. The moon will be in view, obviously, in the daylight. But as the stars come out, we should see the Pleiades encased around the first quarter of the moon. And it's possible, if we're lucky, that we will actually, because of the leading edge of the moon will be dark, it will actually occult some. You'll actually see some of the stars disappear in the Pleiades cluster. It's right on the edge of the, here, whether we can see it or not, because it's right on that twilight zone, if you like. But again, it's quite a nice mirror with the thing I was talking about with Jupiter and Venus, that we've got this thing about twilight and then these magical moments coming out of the twilight. And we've got a similar one with regard to Mercury. On the 12th of February, Mercury is starting to come back up as a morning star. And again, right on the twilight, the waning crescent moon will become very close to Mercury. So we've got these three things that are happening in the next month, which are all to do with the dawn and the dusk, the twilight, where we get these planets coming together and the moon with them and the Pleiades. They're quite magical things. They're going to be difficult to see. We're going to need perfect weather conditions to see them. We do see them. You know, they'll be magical things, because you'll have that magical light of the twilight mixed with the planets and the Pleiades and the moon. So it's something to look out for. And as well as a really strong magical energy. The full moon itself is on the 28th of February, and that's when Jupiter will have gone down below the horizon, will actually be behind the sun. So that's when we will lose Jupiter for a while. A bit later on, it will come out the other side as a morning star. Saturn is up. It rises about 9 p.m. It's in Virgo. You need to know what you're looking for, though, with Saturn. You can see it with the naked eye, but if you wanted to see the rings or anything like that, you'd have to use a telescope. The rings are just about visible at the moment, but Saturn is becoming more prominent as well. There's one final thing. There's an asteroid, a very large asteroid called Vesta. I think it's called Vesta. And on the 16th, if you know where to look, you'll need binoculars. If you go on the web and check where it is, Vesta is going to be occurring in Leo, so this will come into view as well. So in the next month, there's quite a lot of really good sky energy going on for us to draw on if we want to. And I would really recommend the one on the 21st of February, when the first quarter of the moon comes out of Pleiades. I'm really, really into the moon occulting Pleiades. You have to be lucky to see if it's dark when it happens, because the moon, I think that could be a really magical time on the 21st of February, as well as the special one between the 14th and the 17th of February, when we have Jupiter, Venus and the moon at sunset. We'll see Venus coming up in the dusk, so we'll have a morning star and an evening star, the evening one being Venus, and the morning one will be Mercury, which will be coming up as well. So we've got this nice, you know, Mercury and Venus are the ones that are closest to the sun, and so their motion is very different relative to us, to the other planets, and a very different energy. And we're going to have both of them towards the end of February, visible at dusk and dawn.
So. Brilliant, thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. That was brilliant. Steve's going to be giving us a monthly segment in a similar vein. And he's actually been kind enough to also present the next moot as well. And that's going to be Avebury and the Great Moon Cycles. I hope you can all make that. And if you can't, then we should be putting that up on the blog shortly afterwards, so that anybody else can have a listen as well. Thank you very much for listening in. Take care. Bye-bye.